So what we've done yesterday in the previous lecture, first half of the lecture was on circuit reversibility, universality, and ending up this piece by saying that if you have different set of universal set of gates, then they are comparable with each other in the sense that one will not take an exponential larger amount of resources than another. So, and we mentioned one particular set of universal gates, C naught, Adam R, and T, and then we'll get back to these gates when we do fault tolerance. And so we should know what they are.
I have a question. So the T gate is a rotation by pi over a bar, right?
Yep.
But you mentioned that what you need is a rotation by an irrational multiple of 2 pi. So I'm just wondering, what's the case with this?
So I have to think about this answer. I saw this in the notes in my notes too, and I have to go back. Now, I know for a fact that they are universal. It's my comments about the irrational really that. So what you want to be sure is that these are not gonna, the idea behind it is to be sure that when you, these correspond to rotation on the Bloch sphere. And what you don't want is rotation where suddenly you do a few of those, you come back to where you started. So you want to get to something equal when you combine some of them. So that's the basic idea. And we have to put this in the right words. And yesterday when I started to look at this, and I said, yeah, exactly the same question. I'll dig it up and come back to you. We'll come back to these gates and see them. So I assume that by now you're start to be familiar with those. The second part that we did is to start to look at implementation. And we started to look at one particular implementation with photon. And I mentioned one particular one, which is not scalable. And I missed a few parts, so I'll go back to some of those. But before I go there, there's one more piece I wanted to explain to you. So when we use photons, I should have backup also. Why we want to look at photons, one reason is that photons are cheap. It's easy to have photons. For communication, they are great. They move from one place to the other. Although if you want to do a quantum computation somewhere, the fact that they are moving all the time is a challenge. So you'll have to have some memories. So one thing that you might not need if you have qubits which are fixed. Photons don't interact with their environment very much. So you won't have very much decoherence. But that gives you a challenge, is that if they don't interact with the environment, they don't interact with each other also. So it's hard to make them talk to each other to do things like control gates in some ways. And I'll mention this in a few minutes, one way of doing this. And tomorrow we'll look at another way of doing this. So I'll go that way. We assumed that implementation we'd look at is where the state of your quantum system are related to which path the photons are taking. And then to do one qubit gate, we could do this with putting phase shifters. In part, there are pieces of glass that we put on the path, and this will change the phase of the photon. And then with this, when you define your qubits, you can turn this into rotation around the Z axis on the Bloch sphere. And then we can use beam splitters to do rotations which correspond to the Y in the Bloch sphere. And I explained this a little bit. But I wanted to show you one more thing about these beam splitters. So you remember the matrix, which gives the input, output relationship between photon that comes in and the beam splitter, A1 and A2 dagger, what comes out as A1 prime and A2 prime. And then we write this. Right now I've written these things. We have the beam splitter here, characterized by these two angle. You have a photon that can come in, A1 dagger or A2 dagger, and something comes in. So if the angle theta is 0, then the photon just goes through that beam splitter. It's like if you have nothing. But if you have something like phi equal to 0 and theta is equal to pi over 4, it's called a 50-50 beam splitter. If you have one photon that comes here, it will have an amplitude of going straight through or an amplitude to go there. So we'll have A1 dagger is going to go to A1 prime dagger plus A2 prime dagger. Okay, and then if you would have the A2, you'll have the same thing, but with a minus sign between the two that comes from the minus sign there. So you can do this, and if you have the proposal that we were interested is where we have a single photon that will represent all the states. And here's a way of doing an Adamar. So you have one state of the qubit, A1 dagger, or the state which will correspond to 0, 1. Okay, this is the mode description. But if I think about the qubit, it's the 0 of the qubit. And once we go to the beam splitter, this goes to 0, 1, plus 1, 0, up to, there's a square root of 2 that comes in there. Okay, so I should say proportional to this. And this is equal to the 0q plus 1q. So it's like an NMR transformation to go to a beam splitter. If you want to have a rotation, let's say, around the y-axis, which is different, you'll change these axes. And you could have a little bit more of 0, a little bit of 1 by changing the reflectivity of the beam splitter. So what we'll say, again, I will review a little bit more. But let's suppose that you want to do something a little bit different. If you have a photon that comes in both of those, you can start to look at what comes out. We'll need this a little bit later. But because we introduce a beam splitter here, I'll give you, well, suppose that you have A1 dagger, A2 dagger. So that would not be in our qubit space, okay? Because we have two photons in here. But you can say, OK, the experimentalist is free to do whatever they want. As you go there, it'll be this piece replace that one, this piece replaced, and there's a minus sign between the two. And what you'll get is this goes to A1 prime dagger squared minus A2 prime dagger squared. Which means here, in terms of modes, you have 2, 0, and 0, 2. So there's 0 in the A1 mode there. And if you go back and look at your beam splitter here, it means there's two photons that comes here and zero here. Or plus, there'll be a sign here. It'll be minus, change the phase of this. Or you'll have two here and zero here. And this is surprising. The photon comes in, and they have this property that they interfere the right way with each other. The cross terms vanish. That's the interference. So that you have only two and zero and zero and two. If you take a beam splitter 45 degree and you send two laser beams that would go to a beam splitter, you'll get 50% of the amplitude would go there, 50% of the amplitude which goes there. But if you go to single photon level, you don't get this. You get an interference pattern, and then which gives you something like this. And then there's an experimental consequence of this, which is very neat. It means this state means that when you detector here detects something here, it won't detect anything here, or the other way around. So there's a total anticorrelation between the two. And this is has a name called the Hu-Mandel experiments. And around the 1970s, people went to look at this. And this is really a consequence of quantum mechanics. You cannot really understand this classically, that you send some electromagnetic wave from here and here through a beam splitter, and then you get nothing here and something there. Okay? So we'll come back to this either at the end of today or beginning of tomorrow. We're going to use this a little bit in a funny way, but I thought it was a worthwhile thing to mention as we go there. So we go back to this. And you remember, you send one photon to our in our implementation. And then depending on what is the value of this, you're going to create a superposition of the qubit. So let's say that we start our qubit in the state 0. So it means the photon is coming here. Okay, and depending on what is this, then we create a superposition. Now, how do we add a second qubit in that system? And the idea that people have had is, we had another beam splitter on this line here and another one there. This will give you four paths where the photon can go. So the photon start here. It can go this way or can go this way. And when it arrives here, it can go up, it could go down. Or if it goes there, it can go up and it goes down. And if you label this in terms of the qubit, you'll say this part is, let's say, 0, 0. And I'll put a little q here to say we're in the qubit space, which I want to distinguish from here, which this is in the mode space. So if I would be at least correct, I should put an M there so that you guys don't get confused. But as I write, I might forget a little label. And if I do, and you're confused, throw me something. I'll straighten this. So the state here correspond to 0 and 1 on the qubit. This one is 1 and 0. And this one is 1, 1. And they're all qubits. And if you want to go back and write this in terms of mode, you write this. This is the photon A1 dagger. We'll call this path 1. A2 dagger, this is the path 2. This one is A3 dagger and A4 dagger. So you start with A1 dagger. You go to a beam splitter of that form. You'll get an A1 and D2 that goes there. And then it two more splits. And then you'll get a bunch of A daggers that get kind of multiplied every time you do something like this. And so if the beam splitters here is totally transparent, you might not have this piece here. And then you'll get a superposition which is slightly different. But if you have beam splitters which are 45 degrees, theta is equal to 45 degrees and phi is equal to 0, you start with a state which is essentially 0 of qubits here. And then when you go through all these beam splitters, you get a state of qubits, which will be this, plus this, plus this, plus 1, 1. All the qubit space, okay? Or a superposition of A1 dagger plus A2 dagger plus A3 dagger plus A4 dagger on the vacuum. So that state you should be able to recognize. What is that state? What operation did I do? So when I did the first one, it was like a Hadamard transform. And now what I've done is a Hadamard transform on two qubits, right? Now, to do the first Hadamard transform, I had one beam splitter. How many do I have here? One, two, three. So we have one. I'm going to write it like this. One plus two beam splitter. So let's add one more qubit. And I want to do Hadamard on each of the qubits. So you guys, you're going to help me to be sure that I do this. OK. So I'm going to send one photon here. I'm going to start in the state 0. I'm going to just build on this, a first beam splitter. So something is going to come here. Something is going to come here. I want the third qubit. The state of the qubit is by the path. It's defined by the path. If I want more qubits, I'm going to add more paths. I'm going to add one more beam splitter here. Okay, one more here, and one more here. So if I have this, then I'll have a path which is like this, a path which is like this, a path which is like this, and a path which is like this. Okay, so I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 paths. And is that the right number for 3 qubits? So I think you can calculate 2 to the power 3. It says indeed equal to 8. So if you do this, now that state corresponds to 0, 0, 0 on the qubit. This one corresponds to 0, 0, 1. In terms of mode, you would say this is one A1 dagger, let's say. This one you'll call it A2 dagger. 0, 1, 0. 0, 1, 1. 1, 0, 0. 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, and this one is 1, 1 qubit. So if the photon comes here, it's like a a pinball machine. It's going to hit these beams that are, you know, probably depending this. If they all 50-50, you get the superposition, which is equal. You get the NMR. And how many beam splitter do I need now to do this?
Seven.
Okay, and 7 is 1 plus 2 plus 4. Okay, now if I want 4 qubit, and then you'll notice that this is 2 to the 0 plus 2 to the 1 plus 2 to the 2. This is sort of suggestive enough to know how much it will take to do the NMR again. And you're guessing that it'll take? Perfect. Wonderful. If you want to have more qubits. And you see that this is growing exponentially, right? With the number of qubits. In fact, it's n minus 1. So to do NMRs in this particular system takes an exponential number of beam splitters. A beam splitter is a resource, then it becomes exponentially hard to do that particular gate, which was to be an RSA. Okay. Now, and this is the reason of why I said that this particular implementation is not scalable. Okay. There might be some other gates that kind of are much better behave, and I'm going to show you one. You remember the Toffoli. So what does the Toffoli do? That's it. So if control 1 and control 2 is equal to 1, the target, you apply an x. OK. There's a cousin of the Toffoli, which is instead of an x, it's a z. So it's a control, control, z. And control Zs will come back more and more. So physically, it's usually easier to do phase changes than bit flips. So how do you get Z as a function of the X?
Conjugate with 1?
Yeah, Y or NMR. But I can see you've been well trained in the experimental implementation that NMR is not really, you cannot do it at a second qubit gate. So it's a y pi over 2 or pi over 4, depending on how you define that angle. So it's e to the minus pi over 4 y. Okay. And by the way, you can understand this very well in terms of Bloch sphere. Remember that Bloch sphere? Z. Y, X. So if you want to take something in the Z direction and bring it to the X direction, it's a rotation around the I axis by an angle pi over 2 in the Bloch sphere. But in terms of operator, there's factors of 2 that goes there. So that's how it comes in. So how you can think of this. And the way you transform a unitary operator, it's always U dagger. And so that's why there are 2 in that circuit. Okay? So you can do this. Now, have you done the exercise of how to find, how to write a control knot in terms of 1 and 2 qubit gate? Or this is this afternoon?
This afternoon.
OK. So you'll see, if you want to write this in terms of in 1 and 2 qubit gates, it's a lot of work. You have to do many control gates. And you'll see how it works. And it's a good exercise to find out how you decompose this. But if you have these kind of implementation, it's really easy to do a control Z, control control Z. How would you do it? So the whole idea of a control Z, control control Z, is that if I write in terms of qubit space, the matrix of control control Z, the unitary of control control Z, or the Z version of the Toffoli, what does the matrix look like? So what does the control control Z does? If any states of first 2 qubits are not 0, it doesn't do anything. So it gives you something like this. And when you have the state which is 1, 1 on the second qubit, it gives it a minus sign to the 1. Okay? So it's all diagonal. If you would have a controlled Z, you just have this part here. A controlled quantity, you have all of this. How would you do this in this implementation? You just want to flip the sign of the state which is 1, 1, 1. So how would you do it with beam splitters and phase shifters?
You could add the phase shifter at the only at the 1, 1, 1.
That's it. You would add a phase shifter here. And then you would do that gate by doing one small piece of effort. And then that's it. And if you try to do it in 2-qubit gates, you'll see. It'll take you a lot of 1 and 2-qubit gates. So sometimes there are some implementations that are really good to do some things, but they're really bad at doing something. But in this particular implementation, the defect is if you want to do one of these universal gates, it goes up exponentially. So it's not a good way. And it's not a good way because it doesn't have the tensor product structure of when we do something. Usually when we make a gate on a circuit like this, when you apply something here, so you apply to any state at the same time, and here you go and act on the state themselves. Now, we know that this is not good to do a scalable quantum computation, but maybe if you have a small device who wants to do only a little quantum computation or something, and you don't care about scalability, you have a sensor who wants to send that particular piece of information that comes from the environment. Thinking about it that way sometimes is useful. Okay. So I hope with this you understood a little bit about this idea of building a quantum computer with photons, identifying the states as the path of which they take, and what's the pitfall of doing this. So our first attempt failed to build a quantum computer. But that's okay. You're in good company around the world. There's no attempt which has really succeeded yet. So you have a trial error. The scientific method is important. So we've tried one. And I'm going to show you a second one. We're going to build up on some of the ideas here, but tweak it a little bit. I told you again and again that here you are using a single photon in a big interferometer, which looks like these kind of things. And yesterday when I gave you the proof of REC that you can do any unitary transformation, it looks a little like this in sideways, that the interferometer that they put on the board. So with an interferometer like this, you can do any unitary transformation, but there's some simple ones like Adamar that you couldn't do efficiently. You cannot do efficiently. I'm going to use some of the ideas here, but change it a little bit, tweak it. Instead of using a single photon, I'm going to use many of them. I'm going to use, in fact, but not too many of them, because if I use an exponential number of photons per qubit, then you're going to tell me that I'm cheating. So I'm going to use one photon per qubit. Okay? And this is called a dual rail way of thinking about implementing qubits with photons. So I'm going to have these quantum circuits. And I'm going to kind of put always two things per qubit. So this is qubit 1, this is qubit 2, and then I could have more qubits. And these two lines will correspond to two modes. Two of these A daggers, okay, for each of the qubit. So to get the state 0 of qubit 1, it'll be similar to what I had before. It will correspond to the state 0, 1 in terms of the mode. So the photon is here. And if I want to have the state 1 on the qubit, I'm going to put the photon up here. Okay. Now, what I'm going to do different than before is that when I look at the second qubit, I'm going to add another photon in here with the same idea. The photon is at the bottom, It's the zero, the second qubit. If the photon is at top, it's the one, the qubit. Okay? And now I have to go back to my DiVincenzo criteria. So I've defined you the qubit, and I'm going to define you the gates that you can do with them. But before that, I'll jump one of them and say, what are the measurements that we do? Well, the measurements are easy. You pay, put photon detectors here and here and here. And if you get 0 and 1, then you know that it's this one. You can measure in the 0 and 1 basis, or if you get the other way around. Okay? Now, if for some reason these things get mangled and you get 2-0, then you know that you've done something wrong in your computation, some errors has come. But maybe at some point we might be able to do something funny, getting outside the qubit space and do the funny trick. But this is just, I'm planting a seed in your brain doing that. Okay, so I want to do 1-qubit gate first, and then we're going to do a 2-qubit gate. So you want to do 1-qubit gate. But we've done this a little bit over there. Can we get inspired? And the answer is yes. If you put a phase shifter here, it's going to affect that photon, which will change the phase here. Okay? So this is what we were doing before. Okay? And we can do the same thing for the second qubit if we want to have a rotation or phase shift. In the second qubit, then you'll put your phase shifter here. So phase shifter implies a Z rotation, which is really changing the phase. Okay? So this is what we learned. Okay? Then we can use beam splitters in the same way. So we are going to put a beam splitter here. Okay, so instead of having them coming perpendicular, I'm going to kind of write it in a slightly different way. And if I had split them a little bit higher up, then it would be easier for the diagram. But this piece here, so let's make sure that this is a phase shifter. This is a beam splitter. So a phase shifter has only one input and one output. Beam splitter has two input, two output. If we do this, well, we've done this already yesterday. This will lead to a wire rotation. Okay? If I take phi equal to 0, this gives me to a wire rotation, and the calculation is the same. Now, the slightly different thing is that to do a rotation on this, I always do my beam splitter between these two, and between these two, over there they were going to become all unruly and kind of crisscrossing each other. Here I'm going to do it in a different way. Okay, so I have my, I can generate any 1-qubit gate with a combination of those. So what I have left is a 2-qubit gate. It's possible to show that if you use only linear optics with this scheme, you can never get a 2-qubit gate. So the idea is you go to your friends who do optics, and you say, is there something which is nonlinear? And there's they'll say, yes, there is. There's something called Kerr media, which has an Hamiltonian, which looks like A1 dagger A, A3 dagger 3. You have two modes that comes in, and this is the Hamiltonian that affect your system.
So that's not a name. Does that have an index?
The what?
The second day.
Thank you. Okay. So what does that do on the vacuum or on state? So suppose that now we're thinking about modes and we're in the vacuum. Okay. This is a creation operator. This is an annihilation operator. Okay. So the vacuum for both modes, I'm going to call this 0, 0. If H is applied on this, the annihilation operator on the vacuum gives you what? 0. Now suppose that I have one photon, and let's call it on this mode, and I apply this Hamiltonian. So A1 annihilation operator on the creation operator, so this is really equal to a creation operator like this, gives you something which is non-zero. Okay? And then, but annihilate this one and then create it again. So this will give me something which is non-zero, but there's nothing in this mode here. So this one will also give me zero. Then you have the same thing here. When you have 0, 1 is the same thing, so you get 0. And then when you have 1, 1, then this annihilation annihilate this one annihilate this one, and this thing recreates them, and there's a factor that comes in. When you use these annihilation operation and creation operator, you always have to factor it as some square root of, well, so I'll leave that number to come in, but the important is that it's not zero, so we're going to call it one, okay? And you can see that this is nonlinear, because what's happening in here, so this is like the sum of this and this, but this is not the sum of those and those, okay? And so when we try to turn this into a gate, and this is what we're going to do, we're going to make a gate between this and this, okay? We'll do... that we're going to use to implement the two-qubit gate. And so when we do this, we don't apply the Hamiltonian directly, but we apply an Hamiltonian which is of this form. This, where chi is the strength of this nonlinear effect, it will give you a phase which is zero when you have these states, but when you have that state that hits that system, then this will go to e to the I. chi, and it will do you. It will give us something like so. There at the control gate. Here I want to have a control gate. So the control z gate is something like this. Here the phase is different. It will give you something which is e to the I chi, right? If you have that state, or that state. E to the 0 is equal to 1, but if you have the final state in the mode representation, you get e to the I chi. So you can then use this here, and it indeed will do a control phase gate on the qubit. So let's look at this. If the qubit here is 0, nothing should happen. Well, there's a 0 on the first mode, so this operation is never going to give you anything except 1 that comes out. If the second qubit is a 0, so you need the first qubit to be a 1 in here to affect it here. But if you get a 1 and a 0 here on the qubit, then you should not get anything, which is something like this. But when you have 1 and 1 in the qubit space, it's equivalent to have 1 and 1 in a photon space. You're going to get that phase that comes out. So then you have a control gate. And then you're so keen that you have your... I'll just finish my sentence. You're so keen that you have your model for quantum computation. You're running out of lab and very happy because you have all the pieces there. But there's a problem here.
It doesn't seem reversible. The pair of media.
Why not? So if you take that as a control phase gate, let's take the dagger of it. And then if you, so you remember there's zeros here, right? You multiply it, you'll get 1, 1, 1, and these two things are gonna, yep. So you're all happy. You go to the lab and your friend who has kind of given you this care media, you say, how good is it? It turns out that it's very, very, very hard to get chi, which is more than a tiny number. So if you have bulk processes, like something that they use in commercially, you have things which are 10 to the minus 3, 10 minus 4 at an angle. And so people started to work very hard to try to kind of boost this at the single photon level. And so what they looked at is you have a cavity. You put an atom in it, and you send your two photons, or one photon, And it turns out that when you have two photons, these things get excited and they interact with the cavity and it leads to these Kerr terms. But the biggest amount you would like really to do things like a control knot, you need a control Z, which corresponds to chi is equal to pi. But people get only a few degrees, pi over 10 or something like that. So you need to do this 10 times. And we're not good enough to kind of do this kind of 10 times. Okay? So this was a great idea, but the challenge is this 2-qubit gate. So we tried once. We failed. We tried it twice. We failed. So you probably hope that at some point, the guy in front will give you a solution which works. And so that will be the... So there's another proposal called linear optics quantum computing, where we're going to use something which builds on these two proposals in one way or the other. We're going to use some linear optics and the first 1-qubit gate and 2-qubit gates of proposal number 2. And what we're going to try to do is try to find a different way of getting a nonlinearity in that system. Okay. Before I go further, I should ask, is there any question? No? That's good? Okay. So the next next piece, now I should tell you, it's also called a KLM proposal. Now I mentioned a KLM book, which was K. Laflamme Mosca. This is a different KLM. It's a Knill Laflamme Milburn. I don't know why I collaborate with people who have K and M and things. I don't know why this happened. So it's sometimes called a KLM proposal. But by humility, I'll call it the LOQC, which is how it appeared, but people then changed it. So the basic idea of LOQC is build your qubit of that form, and then use one piece that we had not used up to now, the nonlinearity of the detector, and use this in some funny way. And I should bring a little piece of history in there. That sometimes scientists like to compete against each other and challenge each other and all that. And this proposal came about because when I was, and Manny and I were at Los Alamos National Lab, there were a few other groups who were doing quantum computing. And Manny and I were working in NMR. And there's a challenge with NMR about the scalability. And when a colleague, and I won't mention the name, was working on the piece which is at the top. And then he was claiming that he was doing quantum computing. The challenge in NMR also is that you don't have pure states, but mixed states. And we'll see this tomorrow or Monday. And so they were saying it was not really quantum. So Manny and I sat down, and we wanted to prove that by using linear optics, you would never have anything which is ever scalable. And we sat down and calculated things and proved that every time that you go to the beam splitter, you can always make a classical prediction, which is faithful to the quantum one. And it worked very well. But there was one little problem in our proof, is that when we were making measurement, the theorem would fail. But we said, when you take a measurement, it can never help you to do quantum computing. Because suppose that you've done this big Hilbert space where you have the NMR. You take a measurement, you collapse the space. So you don't have this effect of interference anymore. So that was our gut's intuition. So, but because we're not totally happy with the proof. We took the proof and put it in our drawer, and we said, when sometime we'll get back to this. In 2000, there was a fire, forest fire that came through the town of Los Alamos. So we were both evacuated from the town, and we had to go and live in Santa Fe for a week. So I bumped into Manny one day, and we were saying, OK, we're stuck here. We have nothing, kind of all our books and everything. We're kind of at the lab. Let's kind of think about what we're going to do when we come back. So we kind of made a list of the different projects and said, oh, yeah, we should kind of finish this and send it. And it's not that interesting, but it will shut up our competitor. It's kind of. So we started to work on this. And Manny, the day after, he comes back and says, the proof really doesn't work. And I have this really bizarre effect that maybe it can be used. And then he tells me, you can do a gate which is nonlinear if you add a detector, but it doesn't work all the time. So the gate fails from time to time. And I said, well, then you're in trouble if the gate fails, if you don't do the unitary transformation. And the reason that we thought, that I thought initially that it would never work, is that suppose that you do a gate and you have a probability a quarter that it succeeds. So you have a circuit, 20 qubit. You do that 2-qubit gate. It succeeds with probability a quarter. If you do it only once, you just have to do the experiments 4 times, and you'll get a reasonable answer at the end. But if you add another one, then the probability is going to be squared. And if you do n of them, you'll get a probability which is the n. That's not good, because if you make a plot of this, the probability of success of your computation as a function of number of gate goes down exponentially. And the claim in quantum computing is that you should do something which is exponentially more powerful, but this is going to decimate it. So I thought, But Manny said, you know, this is not totally, if you are dumb enough to just do it and just let it go, yes, you won't have a speed. But we know from quantum architecture. So we had an advantage from the people who did quantum optics. If you have the advantage of thinking about the error correction, maybe you can catch up these errors. And if you catch up these errors, then maybe it doesn't matter. In this particular case, and you'll see this in a few minutes, it fails, but you know when it fails. And you know, in life, you do errors all the time. But when you know you've done an error, you're a little bit ahead, because then you can take action and correct yourself. So that knowledge was very useful. And it turns out that with this, we're able to show our schemes where everything kind of got OK. And neither Manny and I were quantum optics people. What we knew about quantum optics was what A daggers and A's are doing, and what beam splitters and phase shifters are doing, which is pretty abstract, very different than a lab. So we bumped into J.R. Milburn, and we talked to him about this whole proposal. And we thought, there must be something wrong here. And we spent a couple of weeks going through all the details. And then he improved places here and there. And then he said, I think that's OK. We put the paper on the archive, really worried that somebody would say, oh, these guys, they are lunatics. Like, look, they've made this stupid error. It turns out that, well, up to now, nobody has found a mistake. Maybe you guys will find one, and that's OK. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to use what we've built on, that is the qubits in that system, the dual rail. And we already know how to do 1-qubit gates by phase shifters and beam splitters. What we're going to do, which is different, is that we're going to change the 2-qubit interaction. I'm going to show you how to do a control sign gate. Okay, the control sign is the cousin of the control knot. If I can do a control sign, I can do a control knot by adding the NMR. So I'm going to show you how to do a control sign gate out of a nonlinear gate that doesn't work all the time. Okay. Now I cannot stop here. You know, I have to justify you guys of how I'm going to catch the error. And I'm going to catch the error by using quantum teleportation. So I assume that most of the time people have told you quantum teleportation is a way to move information from one place to the other. Okay? I think you will see in one of the tutorial, you can use quantum teleportation to make gates. So you, instead of teleporting the information, you can teleport gates. So in fact, the person who, one of the person who found this was Daniel Gottesman, who's here at Parameter. And it turns out that when you start to realize this, you can transfer the difficulty of making a gate into the difficulty of making the state that you need to use for the teleportation. And so this is critical because the state in the teleportation is a given state. So if it fails, you don't use it to the teleportation. But if you succeed, you use it and you go forward. And so this is the basic idea of LOQC. Now, I'll add one more piece, which life is never that simple. You cannot do exact teleportation with linear quantum optics. It doesn't always work. So there's another source of error that comes in. But then by that time, I'll start to be a little bit tired. I'll tell you how to improve this. And there's two ways. There's a way to improve the teleportation that I'm going to show you. Or you can do quantum error correction to correct this, because the mode of failure is a very specific one. OK, so I gave you this big idea. Now we have to plunge into this. And as I go through these details, I'll explain to you where we are in these different steps. So the first piece that we need to know is to do a gate. I'm going to call it NS minus 1. It's a non-deterministic sign gate. It's a control sign gate, which doesn't work all the time. Okay, and we're going to make a circuit with this. Okay, we'll have a state that comes in. And this will be a photonic state. It won't be the qubit state. And it'll give you something like this. And you have modes that comes in, a mode which will be 1, a mode will be 0. And you're going to make a measurement here. And you'll have to have a measurement which is 1 and 0. And when this gate works, that is when you really measure 1 and 0, the effect of this will be nonlinear. Okay? This will be made only of beam splitters and phase shifters. So if you don't make this condition of 1 and 0, then it cannot be nonlinear. But when you measure it and you project it in the space, it acts like a nonlinear gate. And so you might say, where does the nonlinearity come from? It comes from the measurement. Because measuring two photons is not the same thing as measuring one photon twice. And that's the neat little trick. OK. So how do you build this? So you've already seen part of it, and that is going to be part of one of the exercises. You have and then I'll do a lot of circuits of that form. And I'll ask Aggie to send you some copy of these circuits, because some of the time you might not kind of miss a piece of it. And they are hard to kind of draw on all this, but you'll see. I'll try to be careful. So we have beam splitter, T1, T2. Theta 1, phi 1, theta 2, phi 2, theta 3, phi 3. And we have a phase shifter, phi 4 here. And we take one photon that comes here, zero photon that comes here. So this corresponds to A2 dagger. There's no A3 dagger. And then here, we'll have A3 dagger prime, A2 dagger prime. And then there'll be a function of A1 dagger prime in here. And if you take the right angles in here, and these are the ones that I gave the other day, theta 1 equal to theta 3 equal to 22.5 degree, and theta 2 is equal to about 65.5 degree. And you might say why this angle, the sine of this is some square roots that you can find out, but if you do this approximately, it'll be good enough. And phi 4 is equal to pi, or 180 degree. If you do this, and again expand it the way I mentioned yesterday, and the initial state here is alpha plus beta A1 dagger plus gamma A2 dagger. Okay? So now, remember, we are not in the qubit space. We have a circuit, bunch of photons. You go there, and then you project in the space where you have here 0 A3 photons, 1 A2 photon, and you look at what is the state which is left. And what the state which is left is alpha plus beta A1 dagger minus gamma A1 dagger squared. Okay? And this is what I claim a nonlinearity. It's nonlinear in terms of A1 dagger, because you should square the effect of here to be there if it is linear. Okay, if you would change, if you would stop here, then you would have e to the I phi. In front of this, you would have e to the 2 I phi. But if you go through this funny little circuit, what you get is something of this form. Okay? So I'm going to stop here. And tomorrow, I'm going to show you how to use this with these qubits to do a control sign. Okay? I'm going to use two of those. Okay? Kind of one at the top, one at the bottom, with two beam splitters. And I'll show you that this does a control sign. Oh, I should have added one more thing here. Important things that you have to notice is, what is the probability of success of measuring 1 here and 0 here? And the probability is 1/4. Okay? So 3/4 of the time, you'll get other answers. And when these answers come in, you have to do something. Say, I'm not doing this step, or I'm not doing this step. So 3/4 of the time, it fails. But 1/4 of the time, it works. And it's really important that you know. If you would not know if it fails or not, then you're stuck. And you have this probability of gates where you cannot do anything. But because you know, then you can change your tactics and try to correct the effect of getting something which is wrong. Okay? So 1/4 of the time, you get this. And then you can use that non-deterministic sine gate. You use two of them with beam splitters up in a circuit like this. And then it will show that you get a control sine gate. And because you use two of those, it's going to succeed with a probability of 1/16. So you'll say, I'm digging my hole here, getting even worse. But using teleportation, I'm going to bring it back. Quantum teleportation would work perfectly with linear optics. I would be done. But it doesn't. So I'll show you how to modify it. OK? So. For once, I finished earlier. Questions? I should point out that you learn about quantum teleportation. This is a neat use of quantum teleportation. So this idea would have never worked without having the idea of you can teleport gates. And the second thing also that you need is some form of error correction. So two things that you'll hear about is need to be used to make one implementation. Okay.